That's right. It's Tuesday, which means it's the highlight of your week because the Parish of the Patriots show. The Parish of the Patriots show is back with all humility. No, I'm glad you're back. It's glad to be gathering up the congregation once again. Whatever brought you here. If you're a new listener, we do have a Christian specific segment. We do that around the halfway mark of the show. I say around because sometimes it's a little sooner, sometimes it's a little later. But we do have that. Recommend you stick around and listen to that. Hopefully, you won't be disappointed. I'm glad to hear. If you want to be a part of supporting the show, we do pass the offering plate around. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I get this out of the way right up front. If you want to be a part of that, it's easy. Go to the bottom of the description page for the show here on Radio Albion. And you'll see we got snail mail. The easiest method. I don't care how I don't care if you don't know how to do cryptocurrency because we do have snail mail. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin, got Monero address down there, got email address, you can drop your notes. If you've got another cryptocurrency, drop me an email. I can get you an address for that. I have no pride. I'll take your whatever coins. Anyway, anything you do give, it is much appreciated. It helps because, I'm poor. I'm very poor, and so it does. Every little bit helps. Don't be thinking oh, this ain't enough. He'll turn his nose up at that. Like I said, I take your whatever coins. I take your shit coins. I don't care. I'm poor. I take whatever I can get. Listener supporter mailbag isn't taking long this week. GPT, greetings from Clown Earth, from Mr. T. Greetings back to you, Mr. T. The clownage. That's how much time I spend. That's how much time I spend talking about, putting money in the plate, sending money. It was less than a minute, probably around 30 seconds from start to finish. And that even included the listener supporter mailbag. I don't know. I don't know whether to say that's good or bad. It is what it is. Clownish things. Yes, I was looking. I always scan the news before I start recording the show because I record the show over the weekend. Usually on Saturdays, most of the time I record on Saturdays. And I always scan some headlines, because I don't want to sit down and record the show not realizing that, nuclear war is actually officially kicked off. And here I am rambling about, some esoterical nonsense you don't really care about when everybody's talking about getting nuked. And so I always check the headlines, and a lot of times things grab my eyes. And grab my eyes. And this morning was one of those cases. I was scanning the headlines and I saw this story. It's a Trump story. My Trump imitation is not very good. I know it's not very good. I did a lot better Bill Clinton imitation. I feel your pain. Let me tell you, as president of the United States and I'm married to this bitch, Hillary, I feel your pain in more ways than you can understand. So I can do a better Bill Clinton than I can a Trump. Okay, no more imitations. I'm not going to put y'all through that. Y'all do the courtesy of listening to this show. You deserve better than to have to listen to my lame impersonations. Saw this Trump story this morning. And setting aside the cringiness of it, and these are the prices I pay. The price I pay, the sacrifices I make for all of you. This story is about, of course, we have all these people that went out, supporting Trump, the January 6th people. And, with hindsight and any clarity, you understand the whole January 6th thing was simply Charlottesville 2.0. It's the exact same playbook, basically, played over again. And now you've got all of these people who are sitting in jail, many of them already sentenced to prison for being there, most of them for simply walking around inside the Capitol building. And, of course, they were there to support Trump. Trump told them to march down there. Y'all know the story. We don't need to hash that out. And now, when Trump left office, before he left office, he could have issued a blank pardon, and that would have been that, but he didn't. For whatever reason, he didn't. Now, you can sit there and say, well, it's probably because his son-in-law. It may very well be. But at the end of the day, he made the choice not to pardon these people. Again, all of you already know this, so I don't need to beat this to death. This story I read, though, is about this fundraiser for some of these people that are in jail for their defense fund. And it was just so cringe. They've got a video out on YouTube and whatever. Probably Trump's probably promoting it on his Truth Social that nobody looks at. Nobody's on there. He speaks into the ether. He's in the ghetto of social media. And they did this video, the January 6th choir. And these people are singing the Star Spangled Banner. And they're singing, these prisoners, these political prisoners are singing the Star Spangled Banner. And then it'll pause. And it's got Trump repeating the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. And then it goes back into them singing the Star Spangled Banner. And then they'll pause. And he reads the next part of the Pledge of Allegiance. And it says at the video, and I have to just say, it says, because I watched the video and I made it about 30 seconds to a minute of it, not even a minute in. And the cringe was too much for me. I have a high tolerance for cringe, but there's only so much I can tolerate. And it says at the end of the video, then the prisoners start chanting USA, USA, USA. Imagine chanting for the government that is locked you up in jail. It amazes me how people are so desperate. They're so desperate for, I don't know, they're so afraid of the unknown. They just deny reality. They deny reality even when it's at the point that the government, the USA that you're chanting for, has thrown you in jail. They are throwing you in jail, ruined your life, and are trying to put you in prison, and you're still chanting for them. It's breathtaking. And they do this, and Trump is helping them raise money for their defense. See, I completely missed that. I almost slipped into a Trump impersonation. That's why I sounded goofy right there. I said I wasn't going to do that. That's what I get for not sticking to my word. Trump, you know, is helping them raise money with this nonsense. Now, he could have just simply, they wouldn't be in this predicament in the first place had he simply issued a blanket pardon. And again, I don't care who advised him, whatever, he had to make the decision. You're responsible for your own choices. I would say leadership is a two-way street. Leaders always want the people following them to be loyal to them because that's how you accomplish things. You got to have people that trust you, that are loyal, that buy onto the program. But I always say loyalty has to be a two-way street. Otherwise, you're just an idiot. You know, if you're one of the followers and you're loyal to your leader, that's good. But when the leader turns around and shits all over you and throws you under the bus because it's convenient to them, when he has it in his power to make sure that the government isn't going to throw you under the jailhouse, and he doesn't do that because the media might say bad things about him and everything is about him, then you do not owe him any loyalty anymore. It's clownish. It's clown world. You don't owe loyalty to somebody who doesn't give you loyalty back. I'm not preaching early, but you have been reading the book of 1 Samuel in the last week or so, you know, and you read about David and his dudes and these guys where he had like 600 guys and they followed him everywhere. It didn't matter. It didn't matter if he said, you know, we're going to go in here and make war with Philistines. And there's about 3,000 of them. But come on, my 600 dudes, we're going to go kick some ass and take some names. And they didn't question it. They just went. But you see, it was a two-way street. He watched out for his guys. He was leading them into battle. Of course, it was obviously old days when, you know, leaders led their men into battle versus cowards sitting back in a comfy office somewhere ordering other men to go die. But anyway, nonetheless, loyalty, the point here is loyalty is a two-way street. And Trump did shit all over these people. I saw like a little cartoon meme thing one time. Y'all probably seen it too. And it's the inside of a dark, dingy jail. And the January 6th guys are in there rotting in jail. And Trump's peeking through the window and he's telling them, you know, if you get out in time, be sure and vote for me in 2024. It's very telling. Loyalty. Leadership requires loyalty both ways. As soon as a leader does not have any loyalty towards his men, demonstrates he has no loyalty to his men, then the men don't owe any loyalty to him. It's always got to be a two-way street. You know, that's one of the burdens of leadership. Trump is just a demonstration. I can't believe people are doing this Trump thing. I'm sorry. I can't. If you're one of them, I'm sorry if this offends you, but tough shit. It's the truth. I can't believe people are still acting like it's real. I mean, on the one hand, they're all sitting there going, oh, yeah, you know, the election was hoax, which it was. I mean, obviously, massive fraud was taking place and right in front of everybody's eyes. You don't need the media telling you. You don't need the media telling you it's real. It amazes me. People are so trained to that, you know. It's not real unless the government slash media tells you so. And when you live, you listen to the show, you probably live kind of outside of that paradigm. You don't realize how much people are trained to that. It's breathtaking. It's breathtaking. We had a bad, just an example of this. I had a bad spate of weather come through this past week. I told Sven, I said, you know, we were supposed to do the Daily Nationalist show on Friday, which we did. And I told him, you know, Thursday, I said, you know, we're supposed to have bad weather come through. We may have tornadoes. I said, if I don't show up to record with you on Friday, it's because I'm dead. My house got blown away. Obviously, hate to disappoint my detractors, but I'm still here. But anyway, we had this bad weather come through. See, there's a point to this story. We had this bad weather come through, and it wasn't nearly as bad as what they hyped it up to be. And the next day, Friday morning, I'm watching the local news, and some person had recorded on their cell phone a little twister, you know, a little tornado. We had the little twist-up tornadoes. You know, it's not like a major, like you see these huge mammoth tornadoes when they come across and wipe everything out. It's what we call a little twist-up. It just, you know, it's a tornado comes down, just twists. It's like a dirt devil on steroids. I mean, it's a tornado, but I mean, it's a very weak one that comes down, but they have a definite, obvious shape. And the reporter on the scene that was going to share the video, this is the lady who took the video, and they're talking to him. She says, well, you know, we think this is a tornado. You know, we're going to show y'all this video, but we don't know if it's a tornado. We won't know if it's a tornado until the National Weather Service comes out and confirms for us. And then they show the video. And it's a twister. It comes down. You see the stuff fly up, and you can see the thing swirling around, and it goes back up in the clouds. But you see, it's not a tornado until the government officially says it's a tornado. And everybody acts like this is normal. You don't need the National Weather Service. Look at the damn video. It's a tornado. I'm telling you, it's a tornado. You don't need, but see, it's not. It isn't reality until the government or the media tells you it's reality. We saw the election fraud, and they say, no, it's not really election fraud because the media says it doesn't exist, so it doesn't actually exist. And sadly, I guess there's people that really believe this. And even the people that complain about it are sitting here saying, they're on the flip side of that, turning around saying, but we're going to vote for Trump again in 2024, and by golly, this time we're going to win. The same people are going around saying, oh, there's obviously all this election fraud in the last election, but they're going to do that next time. Why? Why would they not? I don't even understand the reasoning here. I mean, why would they not? They completely, if you believe there was election fraud, then they obviously, by every observable metric, they completely got away with it. It's like if you put, you put those tacky Christmas decorations up in your yard, you know, and you get up the next morning and somebody stole all of them, they run off with them. When you put them up again, what's to stop them from doing it again? They got away with it the last time. You know, they got away with it the last time. Same people say there's this massive election fraud. Then they turn around and say, but we're going to vote for Trump harder next time. And this time, by golly, we're going to make America better. I suppose the truth is so frightening for people that they will deny it because it's just too frightening to face it. They'll say it on the one hand. Oh, yeah, massive election fraud. They stole the election. What's your answer? We're going to vote for Trump again. Why would they not steal it again? Well, because this time we're going to get really mad if they... I mean, really, what? Exercise in futility. The denial. Got guys sitting here rotting in jail. Now, you can't miss out on it. Like I say, this was Charlotte. They took January 6th. They took the Charlottesville, basically so much of the Charlottesville playbook, not all of it. But they took so much of that playbook and basically ran another version of it. Like I say, not exactly the same. But, you know, it shared the similarity of being, by and large, a setup. You know, you take people that have good intentions and they're trying to make their voices heard, you know, and they turn it into this setup. These people went into the Capitol for the most part because the police opened the door and said, come on in. They always show that stupid video of these people standing there breaking the window. Like, why are they breaking the window? They can just walk in the door. You got people walking around, roaming the halls. And they never tell, the media always never tells how it ended. They say it was broke up by police. But all that happened is the police showed up and said, okay, everybody, y'all need to leave now. And everybody politely walked out. They didn't have to show up with riot gear and start busting people's heads by force. They just told everybody, you need to leave now, and they left. And then, of course, the media and the government made up this entire narrative. But back to leadership. Trump threw these people under the bus, and now you've got these people. They're in such denial, and I have a really hard time, you know, because I am sympathetic. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm sympathetic. These people tried to do the right thing. And they're in jail for it. I'm absolutely 100% sympathetic. But at the same time, you just have to stand in awe. Because I can tell you, if that was me in those guys' positions, I wouldn't want to hear a damn thing Trump had to say. And I damn sure ain't sitting there singing the Star Spangled Banner and chanting USA, USA for the government that's threw my ass in prison for exercising what they tell me is my legal constitutional right for free speech. You know, I mean, seriously. I mean, I don't understand that. You talk about Stockholm syndrome. It's breathtaking. I remember back when Trump was in there, you know, and the lefties were always saying, you know, how he was literally Hitler. He was literally Hitler. It's demonstrative that how much people want literally Hitler. What do I mean by that? I mean in the sense of a strong leader to fix this mess. Conservative types understand the country's in a mess. They get that. They understand the country, and they desire a strong leader to take control. All the talk all these people will make in this country, whether lefties, righties, whatever, you know, conservatives, liberals, whatever, and all their talk about their love for the democracy, every one of them treats the president like he's king, you know, especially if it's their guy in charge. You know, that's why the presidential election is this huge thing in this country, because people have this fantasy that that's who's going to, we're going to get this guy in there and he's going to fix everything. They can sit there and jibber jabber about the democracy all they want to, but really they want a king. They want a king. People, they put their faith and their hope in Trump, and the liberals are like, he's literally his Hitler. And deep down inside, the conservatives wish he was, just like the liberals wish Biden was literally, I don't know, Lenin or Stalin or some shit. I don't know, because they all want a strong leader. You know, Hitler, for whatever fault you might find with him, you know, he did have a love for his people. You know, where you want to argue with, you know, how he implemented things or whatever. That's not the point today. But he did. I think it's undeniable that he really did have a love for his people. Trump has a love for Trump. You know, that is just undeniable. You sit here and say, well, you know, but Trump is just like the quintessential narcissist. I mean, he has a love for Trump. It's like you could issue a blanket pardon for these people before you leave office to protect them, to demonstrate loyalty back to them. But no, the media might say something bad about me. And see, that makes Trump feel bad about Trump. So he's not going to do that. So I say, you can sit there and say, well, his son-in-law and he had bad advisors. Doesn't make a shit. A strong leader still understands they make the decisions at the end. Trump should go apologize to those people. Should go do the low bow, you know, put his head on the ground three times, you know, like they do in Asia, like they do in Korea. Bow the head three times or whatever it is. But see, Trump's just about Trump. He don't have no love for the people. Trump loves himself, and he likes being the center of attention. He likes when he has a big crowd cheering him and telling him how bitchin' he is. And that's just whatever. That's who he is. But the people wanted a strong leader, even to the point that they're in this denial that Trump is that strong leader, when obviously he's not. I mean, he's observably not. Even to the point where you're sitting in jail, this guy could have prevented that from happening, didn't. And yet you're going to let him make it once again about himself, that he's helping you somehow by repeating the Pledge of Allegiance. And then you chant USA at the end. Who the hell do you think put you in jail. It's like these conservative types that, you know, on the one hand will talk to you about the Second Amendment and my guns, and they'll take my gun when they pry it from my cold dead finger. And then they'll go around with their blue flags, you know, and talk about how much they love the law enforcement and support the police. And I think, you know, on the one hand, you're telling me that you're paranoid that the government's going to come take your guns. But who the hell do you think they're going to send if they did do that? If the government decides to come take your gun, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to send your heroes in blue. How are you going to bring that together? You know, you're saying they're going to take it from your cold, dead fingers, but yet you worship the badge. You're a badge licker. You worship that. Who do you think they're sending? I don't understand. I don't know how they put all of that together in their mind and it makes some sort of sense. But it's scary. It's just scary to people to accept the reality that the system is not what they believe it is. It does not function in the way they believe it functions. And maybe even nominally did function at some point in time or another. But it's not that. It doesn't matter. You know, you get people go on and on about what the founding fathers established. And that's fine if you're just interested in history, you know? If you're interested in history and you want to talk about that, that's great. I talk about history all day long with you. I find it interesting myself. But understand that that's irrelevant to where we are today. Anyway, yeah, but if doesn't matter. You know, if doesn't matter. We are in the reality. We are in reality. We're here today. You don't have any kind of founding father, whatever the hell. You've got clown world. You've got founding clowners. We founded clown world with our founding clowns. This is the reality we live in today. It's just amazing to see people in that denial, that level of denial of reality that they still sat and said, I cannot picture being thrown into jail. Having, you know, being thrown into jail by the USA and then chanting USA, USA. You know? I don't even know what to liken it to, you know? I really don't. I don't even know what to compare that to. To sit there and chant USA when you're in jail because USA put you there. I don't get it. I can't put that together. Sit there and act like Trump's doing you a big solid because he says the Pledge of Allegiance on a microphone for you, you know, to raise money to get you out of jail. But he could have kept you from being in jail in the first place. I wonder, dream, just if we just had a, you know, he's going to come save us. I don't know, man. It's a failure. It's a failure. He was supposed to be a leader. People hoped, you know, they put faith in him as a leader. I'm not saying he didn't do anything good. You know, people get into this idea, he got this absolutist, you know. Yeah, but what about this? You know, he more or less kept us out of, you know, expanding into more wars. And that was a good thing. You know, I give him credit for that. But by and large, failure of leadership. And I realize that some things, because the system is so, you know, fortified, is so entrenched, is so in place. You know, he wasn't a king. He was limited on what he could do. And I accept that. But I don't accept the fact that he had the opportunity to protect the people that went out there on his behalf. He had the opportunity to protect those people, and he didn't. I'm sorry. I can't excuse that. And I don't understand why people, you know, why people do now, why they continue to have loyalty now to this guy. And we're going to get into the Christian-specific segment here pretty quick. But I think a lot, too. I mean, we look at the world around us. We talk about clown world. And the corruption, I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, the corruption, you reach this. So you have corruption. You got a society. You think you have a society. And, you know, it's a functioning society. You have competent people. You know, you have competent people doing things. And, you know, a functioning society. Now, you have corruption creep in. You know, depending on how much, and it's like having cancer, a topic near and dear to my heart. It's like having cancer. You walk around with a tumor and you feel fine. You don't know nothing's going on. You see, the system's like that. You get a certain amount of corruption, and the system, there's still enough of it functioning and there's still enough competent people doing things and doing their jobs that it can carry that corruption. But you see, we're at this end stage capitalism to where the corruption now is so endemic in the system that now it's breaking down. You know, they've replaced competent people because of this ridiculous ideology that's being pushed. They're replacing competent people with people who are not competent. And with the endemic corruption, everything is breaking down. And things that we used to just simply take for granted. Again, I realize for younger people, it's always been as maybe some sort of state of decay. But I'm old enough, I remember when things worked. I remember when the roads were decent and you didn't have all these near-miss air traffic accidents. You didn't have, you know, trains derailing and then the government lighting off toxic chemicals just because. I'm not saying bad things didn't happen, but you get what I'm saying. The corruption, you know, the things functioned. You know, yes, there was corruption, but we're at this end stage now where the corruption runs so deep. They don't even try to hide it anymore. It's blatant. It's in your face. And now the tumor is so big. Like I said, you can have a tumor. You'd be walking around. You might be listening right now and you got a tumor. You don't know you got a tumor because you feel fine, but it's in there. But trust me, if that tumor grows and gets big enough, you're going to know it's there. And then you go to the doctor and he says, well, yeah, you're hurting because you have a big tumor the size of a watermelon wrapped around your insides, and there's nothing we can do about it because now it's ate up. That's what corruption is. You know, that's how it is. It's so corrupt now. This system, the corruption is so endemic. It's so eaten in. It's so wrapped around every aspect of this system. The reality is it's not salvageable. That's the reality. I'm not telling you. And look, I say that not with now the answer is. I don't know the answer, except that I can tell you, you're not going to salvage it. The corruption tumor is wrapped around every organ in the system. It's so endemic. These people that are incompetent are running things and everybody's corrupt and everything's about paying off other people. You know, for decades, I've heard different times that the government announces they're spending trillions of dollars on infrastructure and the infrastructure is worse than it's ever been. Why? Because that money's not going to infrastructure. It's going into different people's bank accounts because the system is so corrupt to its very core. You can chant USA all you want to. It's not going to change the fact that the system is doomed. When somebody gets told they have terminal cancer, they'll go through a stage of denial. You know, it's natural. If the doctor tells you you're going to be dead, they go through a stage of denial. It's an understandable thing. And it's like we're in this stage of denial. The reality is in everybody's face that the corruption is so endemic, is so a part of the system itself now, that it's inseparable from it. And they're in denial. They're like, no, I can take a couple aspirins and I'll feel fine. I'll be okay. That doctor doesn't know what he's talking about. The system is so utterly corrupt now, and the corruption is inseparable. It's too big. You know, it has reached critical mass now. And the system's going to end. It will end because it can't function. You know, especially the corruption coupled with this idea that they keep, there's nobody left. Who's going to fix it? Like I said, there is no strong leader that's going to come up and take over and fix all of it. At least not until the whole thing collapses in on itself. And what that looks like, I don't know. I can't tell you. Don't have a crystal ball. I just watch the direction things going. But there are things I can tell you with certainty. And that is not, and that is that you are not going to fix this system. You're not. It's just, it's too, the corruption is too entrenched. It's not like you're going to remove one or two people and voila, you fixed the system. You just, It's the corruption is now a part of the system. And yeah, these people, they're in denial. They're still chanting USA. And I'm thinking, why? USA hates you. Why would you chant? Why would you chant for the entity that hates you? Yeah, but I don't know. You know, and it's important. We didn't get into the Christian specific statement. I got to wrap this up. But you know, the January 6th people made much the same mistake. I made comparisons to like Charlottesville. And there's a commonality of error in the two incidences. You know, and again, I'm not faulting the people that fell victim to it. Don't I'm not in any way, shape, or form. This is one of those, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we can look back. And that's important. It's not to criticize the people that didn't have that benefit. It's not. But we need to learn. We need to learn. And the commonality mistake from both that can be learned from both Charlottesville and January 6th, the common mistake here is the belief by the people involved, okay? By the belief by the people involved that they could change the system. You know, that they had political speech, that they had the right to protest, that they had the right to have their voices heard by those in power. And that the system would respect that, that the system would respect their right to protest, that the system would respect the right that they had, would respect the fact that they had the right to hear have their voices heard and their grievances addressed by those in power. They thought the system still functioned. That's why it's important to understand this about corruption and all of the rest of it. So you don't go back and make that mistake. I'm going to tell you, if somebody said we're going to have another Charlottesville protest on, I don't know, May 15th, we're going to have a new Charlottesville protest. Would you go? I mean, seriously, knowing what you know, would you go? Or would you be like, I ain't falling for that again? The January 6th people, they didn't understand either. They thought that the system still functioned to where they could work within the system and make their voices heard, and that the politicians would respond to that, that the system would respond to that and say, wait a minute, this is supposed to be a government and a system by the people, for the people. So they wanted to believe that. Now, in hindsight, and again, I'm not criticizing the people at the time because, you know, hindsight's 20/20, as they say. But it is important to look back and understand the mistakes made so that you don't make it again. You know, like I said, to use the same analogy, if Trump came out and said, we're going to have a massive protest and we're going to march on the Capitol, you know, to protest the fact that back in 2020, they stole the election. You would be an idiot to go do that. But you see these people that are in denial, the very same people will sit here and chant USA, USA. They probably go right back and have the same thing done to them again. That's why it's important to learn. Important to learn the truth. Accept it. Accept reality. As soon as you accept reality, the better off you're going to be. We got to get into the Christian-specific segment of my psychic ability. It's telling me we're going to run long today. So let's go ahead without further ado. You know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. I realize that at times I probably sound a lot like a broken record. I'll sit here to do the Christian-specific segment. And I'll think of what we're going to discuss this week, and I have to go back and look, you know, because I do notes backwards from other people. See, other people make all their notes and they basically have like shows written out almost completely before they do them. I wind up doing the show more or less by the seat of my pants. If I have something I think of during the week, I jot it down. But then after I've done the show, I'll sit there and more or less make a note of what I've talked about. It's backwards of what normal show hosts do, probably shows, but I have to go back and look at my notes and be like, wait a minute, I'm pretty sure I've talked about that, and I go back at least a week or two to make sure that at least wasn't the main topic. But I do know I sound kind of like a broken record. There's reason for that, because really what ails us, what ails the church, what ails our Christian community, as it were, is not this big, complicated, convoluted thing. It really is not even that many things. It's just you can boil them down to a very much a common denominator. The things that plague the church, they're really not that many things. It's just that they've been very, very successful at being, well, very destructive. So as a result, I wind up talking about a lot of the same things. I have to try to make it sound new and fresh, though. I don't want you to get bored. I don't want you to get bored. It's like I've already heard this. So, you know, we add a little flavor, some spices, twist it up a little bit. But no, seriously, we're going to probably once again talk about something this week that I have hit on, but I think we'll get into it a little more. I was thinking the other day about, I was reading in my Bible, and I was thinking to myself, you know, it's great. It's just great that I have access to the Bible myself, and I can read these things and I pray on them, and God blesses me, and He reveals and shows me bigger pictures. And I mean, I'm truly grateful for that I have access, that I can sit here and read the Bible. It's not filtered by anybody else. But I got to thinking about it, and at the same time, there's a downside. There's a downside to it. How many times have you gone around and somebody that has access to a Bible will come at you with some ridiculous gibberish? A good example of this is evangelicals and their, you know, this belief that we need to give money to Israel because that means God's going to bless us. Well, it says in the Bible that if we bless Israel, then God's going to bless us. And you see, Israel exists again, not the people. Well, you see, then they get confused. You know, they don't understand Israel as a people. All they understand is there's now a place carved out on the map. And it says, if you point to it, it says right there, it's written right there, Israel. So that means it's the same as the Bible. And people look at this and they justify all of this foolishness. Well, we have to basically give all our money and fight all our wars for Israel because God's going to bless us. If you press these people and ask them, well, how is God going to bless you? Because it seems to me like things are getting worse and worse. It doesn't, like, look around clown world USA, and it doesn't seem to me like God's blessing us a whole lot. Everything's getting worse and worse. This inquiry will usually be met with either silence or some more mumbling gibberish they can't admit. But I was thinking about this, and that's one of the more, you know, ridiculous versions. And I got to thinking about the notion that the average person, and I was really hesitant to even talk about this because I don't want any, in any way, shape, or form, it's going to be hard to talk about this without sounding like, I don't know, like I'm full of myself, and trust me, it's not. That's not the case. But the average person, and I think, again, I have a lot of confidence in you, the listeners, those of you who are members of the congregation, that you're at a level that you get what I'm saying here, because you're out here in the world too. You're out here living this life every day and dealing with people on a regular basis. Many of you have gone to the MCC and have given up or whatnot, and now you're members of the congregation here. Anyway, the average person does not have the ability. In other words, the Bible doesn't really do them any good. They don't have the ability to understand it. They don't have the ability to read it, comprehend it, understand the context of it, see the bigger picture, or really to be enlightened by it. Now, that's why I said it. I'm very hesitant to talk about it because I sound like, you know, I'm so much smarter. And trust me, that's far from the case, because I'm going to explain why they can't, by and large, why it's so difficult for the average person to do this. The average person is too busy working. I mean, you know, again, you have to have the Old Testament for reference. God appointed a priest class when Israel existed. As a people, he assigned one tribe. They were the priest class. Their job was nothing more but to minister, you know, before God on behalf of the people. That was their one job. They weren't allowed to own land. Why? Because if you owned land, you were going to be farming it and tilling it. And they weren't farmers and tillers. They had one job. Their one job was to minister before God on behalf of the people. Because if they were farming, they wouldn't have time for that. So they had one job. Now, you know, the rest of the people owned property, and they gave in to, you know, they donated to the minister class, to the priest class, so, you know, so that they could eat and survive. And you know, it all worked out. The point is, to really understand this, and it takes a lot of work. An average person You know, I always tell y'all, I'm always like, you know, try to make the time as best you can. I realize y'all got jobs and there's nothing wrong with that. You see, the priest class in of Israel, the Levites, they didn't own land because they weren't supposed to be farming. But somebody had to be farming. Otherwise, there would be no food for anybody to eat. And it didn't mean that the priest class there, the Levites, were better than the other tribes. They just had a different job. Look, the other tribes had to do the farming. They were going to be so busy doing the farming that they weren't going to have time. They couldn't go up and offer sacrifices themselves. They appointed special days, and we're not going to get into all of that. But it all applies. You can apply all of that now because it all relates. Most people, the average person, is too busy going about their daily life with their daily worries. They don't have time. They just don't have time. They got to be work at 8 o'clock in the morning. They're working till 6, 7, 8 o'clock maybe tonight. When in that time schedule do they have time to really read and reflect and pray and seek to be guided by the Holy Spirit to understand these things in a spiritual manner? When? They don't. And somebody's got to do the work. You know, again, this, I'm not faulting people for not being good. It's just a reality. And again, if you look at the Old Testament, you can see that the reality was the people were busy farming or tending sheep or goats or cattle or whatever, what we would call ranching today. They were busy farming and ranching back then. You had to have one class. Now, their job was to minister before God on behalf of the people. And in theory, that's what they were supposed to be doing. Things kind of got messed up there towards the end. And you see now, as we're towards the end, once again, it's gotten all messed up. The point is, when you run into all of these people, such as our example of the evangelicals that think if we give more money to this nation state over there that says Israel, that God is going to somehow bless us, quote unquote. They can't point to what that blessing looks like because things are getting worse. But they have just a gross, malignant misunderstanding of what's in the Bible. And it's so embedded, it's very hard to get it out. They don't want to hear it. They're convinced they're right. But guess what? Because they don't have the time to understand it, they didn't have the time to come up with that. In other words, they repeat this. They're repeating gibberish at you. Well, if we bless Israel, God's going to bless us. Somebody told them that. And this always gets back to the crew of the problem, the core issue, which is a failure of church leadership. And this is the broken record part. I realize I say this a lot, but it's really one of the core problems. It's one of the core problems. It's one of the reasons that the MCC is the MCC. It's one of the reasons that you walk into so many churches and it's a mess. You know, there's no spiritual guidance going on. It's a mess. It's the job. It is the job. The people aren't going to know if somebody doesn't teach them. They're not going to understand if somebody doesn't explain to them. They don't have time. They're working. Yes, they may be trying their best as they go along, but somebody's got to explain these things. And that's their job. That is their job. You got somebody that, you know, they are a full-time preacher in a brick-and-mortar church that people go downtown and they have whatever 100 members of their local congregation, and the preacher lives off of being a preacher. He's got one job. He is supposed to be the modern-day reflection of the Levites in the Old Testament. He has one job, and that job is to instruct the people, to teach them, to give them, to read from the Word of God and explain these things to them so that they can understand it and ultimately apply it in their lives and grow, because they don't have the time because they've got to do the work. Like I said before, the Levites were the priest class because, you know, somebody had to do the farming and ranching. Everybody couldn't be the priest class. It's their job. They got one job. And when you see these churches in such a mess, when you see the Christian community shrinking, when you see people losing their faith, falling away from the faith, turning their faith into this all-you-can-eat buffet of picking out what I like and discarding what I don't like, and I'm inventing my own religion, or one of my favorite things to hate, this notion where people say, you know, coming to my personal truth. They see, they pick out what they want. They go through it like a buffet, and this is the parts of the Bible I like. This is the parts of the Bible I don't like, and I'm creating my own truth, as if the truth is just this abstract thing, and you can make your own truth, and that's your truth. The truth is simply the truth. It stands on its own. It exists on its own. It exists whether someone acknowledges it. It exists whether someone sees it. It exists. We live in this time where the truth is denied and lies are amplified, and it can be very discouraging. As Christian believers, we walk in truth, and can be very discouraging because the media is amplifying the lies. We live in a satanic world because it's all based on lies. You turn on the TV to catch the weather report, and they're going to blast you with lies. And then they come and propagandize you even through TV commercials. If you try to sit down and watch some sort of entertainment, lies, lies, lies. And it can be very gaslighting. You know, you're hit with this all of the time, and you're like, nobody's going to understand, nobody. And it's the world is being swallowed up by lies. But guess what? Those lies have no effect on the truth. The truth still exists. They can't change it. They can hide it. They can obscure it. They can toss dust up in the air. They can generate fog, so as to speak, and try to cover it up and shroud it and make sure nobody says it. They can attack people who point it out and speak it. But the truth speaks. The truth stands on its own. It exists on its own. It's not some abstract concept. It exists. It is the truth. Remember that. Don't let them gaslight you. They can't change the truth. They can sit there and try to hide it, and they can sit there and punish you for pointing it out and standing with the truth. The truth is never shaken. It exists. It will always exist. As much as they try to hide, all they can do is hide it. That's it. All they can do is hide it. All they can do is try to get people to not look at it, but it stands on its own. When people deny the truth and follow the lie, they're condemned by the truth because the truth remains. If they could take the truth away and make it disappear, they wouldn't be condemned by it, but the truth will stand and condemn them. Now, I kind of got sidetracked. Church leadership, you see, as somebody who's supposed to preach and explain and teach these things so that people can just kind of more or less have a condensed version, apply it to their lives. They've taken this up, and the problem is they've turned it into like a worldly job, just another job where you don't have to get your hands dirty. You know, if you're going to be a preacher, and for instance, if y'all listen to this show, probably for the sermons, for the Christian-specific segment, because it's, well, hopefully that's at least a part of the reason why you tune in. If I went down and said, hey, you know, I've been doing this preaching thing for a little bit and talking about these things. I think I do a half decent job. The feedback is overall pretty positive. I'd like to, you know, I see you've got an opening for a full-time pastor here at your church. I'd like to apply. Well, the first thing they're going to say is, where did you go to seminary school? Where's your parchment? Where's your degree? Which school did you learn and teach under? I find it is, it's the same old thing. You know, when Jesus went and was instructing the people, the first thing they did, they come at him and they were like, who did you learn under? Where did you learn these things? Who taught you this? Where did you go to school? It's the same old thing. Credentialism. You see, you're not allowed to do that unless you're part of the club. So where did you go to school? And you see, because they have it set up this way, it's treated as a job. You can imagine a group of college friends hanging around, drinking a few beers, you know, and they're talking about what they're going to do. You know, what are you getting your degree in engineering? What are you? I'm going to be an accountant. What about you? Well, I'm going to go on to seminary school. I'm going to be a full-time preacher. So I don't have to work. I don't have to work real hard. And it is. It's like another job. You went and you go to school and you get your degree in seminary. And you can go and apply and be a full-time preacher. And that's your career. And that's all it is. we see this mess. The people don't know. And I'm guilty of this. I confess it. I'm guilty of this. When people come at me or I read something, you know, and they're trying to use the Bible as a source, or they're trying to use Christianity as the framework of what they're saying, and is so piss ignorant that it's painful. It really drives me crazy. I'm like, that. I get in these moods sometimes that when I see that, I'm thinking, you know, people shouldn't even be allowed to have Bibles. On extreme days, I'm like, people are so stupid. They shouldn't be allowed to have Bibles because this is what they're doing with it. I realize the irony. If I didn't have Bibles, I wouldn't have my understanding. And I'm just saying, there's sometimes I'm so frustrated when people come up with stuff that's so stupid and so lack of understanding. It's just like people shouldn't even have these things. Unfortunately, a lot of so-called preachers, teachers, ministers, pastors, whatever word you want to use, they shouldn't have access to the Bible either because they don't understand it any better than the average Joe. Because, see, they went to seminary school. They have their hand-picked verses and they can look smart and stand up there and says, in, you know, Hebrews 3, you know, in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 4, right off the top of their head, they must be so smart. And they have no understanding of what any of these things actually mean. It's a job. It's a job. They build up a customer base. We see with Jim, Jesus warned us time and again, no servant is greater than their master. If they treat me this way, they're going to treat you this way. You don't get a better deal. We see Jesus' example. He would go and do these miraculous things. He would teach the people and they were blown away. And they're like, this is amazing. This is amazing. He's telling us things and explaining things that we never heard these things explained to us this way before. But then the next day he would tell them a truth on a different matter, not a different truth. The truth is the truth. He would tell them the truth on another matter and they didn't want to hear it and they all left. Can you imagine just about any average preacher standing up there and telling the truth to a people that makes them mad and his congregation gets up and walks out? See, if y'all get up mad at me and get up and walk out, say, I can't tell because I can only tell from the hate emails. No, But really, Jesus would tell them something they didn't want to hear, and they'd all get mad and leave, and it was just him and his 12 dudes again. Everybody was gone. You'd have people sometimes come up at him and be like, what are you doing? If you're building a movement, that's not what you got to do. You got to do this, that, or the other, get everybody hyped up. You show up, tell everybody stuff, and then leave, disappear. Nobody even knows where you're at. What are you even doing here? Because they didn't. They didn't understand what he was doing. The parishioners, the congregations in the churches are the customers, and the customer's always right. There's one thing Americans believe, is the customer's always right, even when they're wrong. If somebody comes into, you know, preaching or whatever, teaching as a job, and it's just another career, then by default, the members of their congregation, the flock, are going to be viewed at some point in time as their customers because that's their income source. If there's nobody there to put money in the plate, then they're not making any money. So the motivation is to tell people what they want to hear. See, it's not something. Following in the footsteps of what you're supposed to do as a Christian believer, preaching and teaching and whatever, is not something really somebody should quote unquote choose as a career path that involves investing years of college and going to seminary, because it usually, if you do it right, you're probably not going to have very much money, like at all. Certainly not enough to justify paying for, you know, multiple years of higher education in order to do so. Oh, it does. This is relevant to you. Now, you may be sitting there going, I ain't no preacher. I ain't no teacher. I'm not any of this. I'm a regular guy. I like listening to your show. What does this have to do with me? It has to do with you because you are going to have opportunities to speak the truth in your life. You want to understand enough that there are going to be times when you can share the truth as well. Maybe you're not doing it, but you're going to have. And in that moment, you are the teacher. In that moment, when somebody comes to you and you realize that this is an opportunity, somebody is coming to you and they don't know what to do, and you've got the answer. They've never had it explained to you. And now you realize, I'm not saying you got to go out and look for it. I'm telling you, there are going to be times when that happens. Your light's going to go off in your head and go, hey, my gosh, this person is telling me they don't understand something, or they're having a problem with something, and I've got the answer. And in that moment, you might not be a full-time teacher, you may not be a full-time preacher, you may not be a full-time minister, but when you tell them that truth that they need to hear in that moment, let me tell you something, you are a minister right there in that moment. So yes, it does. This matters to you as well. We look at this mess, and I want to stay on this topic of people, you know, going to school and becoming preachers. Because I talk a lot. Like I said, broken record time, about failure in church leadership and all of these different churches and the reasons for that, because it is one of the big common denominators. Now, you look at extreme example of this failure of church leadership, and I can't help but to go back to the old standby televangelists, you know, these TV preachers, these cringe TV preachers. I don't watch these, obviously, but I do see them. You know, sometimes I turn on the TV and there they are, and I'll watch it for a few minutes and cringe. Sometimes you'll go over to somebody's house, you know, if you have elderly relatives, they will a lot of times have these people on the TV. You need to be sure and tell them, but be sure you don't give them people no money. A lot of these people spend hours and hours talking about nothing except why you should send them money. These TV guys, they spend hours and hours telling you why you should send them money. We pass the plate around here. You know, we're up front. We pass the plate around early on in the show. We do the listener supporter mailbag and we move on. Usually it takes less than 2 minutes. I've seen these people because I've been around people that have this on their TV. And these people will spend hours and hours talking about how they've got to raise all of this money. They got to raise all of this money because Jesus or whatever. You have these people. And they have their big extravagance mega churches, as I like to call them. They're mega churches. And they're on the TV, and boy, the camera pans around, and it looks like they're in this massive coliseum. You know, it could be a rock concert going on in there. But people are rocking to Jesus, except they're not. I think of when Jesus admonished the rich man, you know, this fella, and he comes up to Jesus. He says, I've followed the laws my whole life. I've done all of this stuff. What do I lack? Now, he didn't tell Jesus who he was. He just comes up to Jesus and says, look, I've followed the laws, and I've studied the prophets, and I've applied these things as best I can to my life. He didn't understand what he lacked. What do I lack, Jesus? I've studied the prophets, but he didn't understand them. Jesus knew the answer. Without this guy even telling him who he was, this guy just comes up, just rolls up on Jesus, talking about, I've studied the prophets, I've studied the laws, I've studied the scriptures. Now you tell me, Jesus, what do I lack? Jesus said, just lack one thing. Guy was probably like, okay, one thing, that ought to be easy enough to solve. Sell everything you have, give it to the poor, take up your cross, and follow me. The guy went away very sad. He went away sad because he was a man of wealth. This was when Jesus makes the much uh, much remembered quote about it being easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Just do this one thing. Okay, what's the one thing? Sell everything you have, give it to the poor, take up your cross and follow me. You see, Jesus says time and again, a man can't serve two masters. If you're serving money, then that's who your loyalty is going to be to. When I look at these TV guys with their styled hair and their mega churches and their wife's up there and she got her bleach blonde hair, whatever, and all her diamond rings, and they're obviously very wealthy, I think of that quote from Jesus. If Jesus himself said, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, take up your cross and follow me, what do you think they would do? They wouldn't go away sad. They would just hold another fundraiser. I'll tell you something. You don't get on TV. You don't get on. I've seen these people. I've listened to their work. And it's pretty bad. No, I'm serious. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You know? Again, I'm in no way hyping myself like I'm somebody. I'm confident in my heart that I'm humble, if that makes any sense. But seriously, y'all know what I'm saying. You've seen these guys. You've heard those guys. And I mean, it's very low tier. It's very low tier stuff. In fact, I wonder who falls for this. Who's sending these people all this money? You don't get on there unless you sell out. I'm going to tell you. I talked about how I couldn't walk into a regular church in any community and get a job as a pastor there. Can you imagine if I showed up at, you know, one of these networks, if I showed up to, I don't know, whoever produces these shows. So here's a sample of my work. Put me on TV. I can do it. I may not have the looks for it, but neither do these guys either. I have a face made for radio, but put me on there. Yep, I can do this. I can reach all these people. They got to listen to one sample of what we do here, and they're going to say, no, I don't think so. I don't think you have the right qualifications. You have to take the ticket. You have to sell your soul. If you're going to get the money, if you're going to be on TV, you've got to follow the script. All you have to do is look at one of these people that spends hours raising more money. Every message they have is explained to you why you should give them money. And they have all sorts of versions of it. If you want to be spiritually uplifted, buy my Ford, you know, my three box DVD set. If you want God to buy you a new house, you need to send me money. And you see, I'm going to read out of the Bible here. You see, he's going to multiply that tenfold. You see, because again, they don't understand it. Or if they do, they're purposely twisting it. Either way. Yeah. If you give me money, God's going to get you a new house. God wants you to have everything you ever desired. God will give you all sorts of things. You're going to live in comfort. Everything's going to be great. If you just give me money, another fundraiser. Jesus wants me to have a new jet. You imagine any of these people selling everything they had, giving it to the poor, taking up their cross and following him? No. That's all you got to know. Yeah, you know the answer to that. The answer is no. We got to get ready to wrap up. Why does any of this matter? Why does any of this matter? Because the actions, we talked last week about doing something, and that doing something involving, you know, if enough individual people live their life in the correct way, they're not going to go along with evil. And enough individual people do that, it adds up and becomes a collective that refuses to go along with the agenda. If you're following Christ, you're not following this world, this fallen world. It matters because when you look around, because everybody's got a reason. Everybody got a reason. They look around and they say everything's such a mess. And everybody got a reason. It must be because of this group. It must be because of that group. It must be because of whatever. Because there are obviously multiple things going on. But when you look at Christianity and the failed state of the church, by and large, the MCC, when you look at these things, Understand, it didn't happen. There's a reason. When you run into your average run-of-the-mill churchgoer and they're piss ignorant about what's in their Bible, they don't understand any, and they try to throw this at you without even, obviously, without even understanding any of it, then there's a reason for that. There's a reason they don't understand it, because nobody's taught them. Nobody's instructed them. You know, I go down to such and such church. Let me tell you why you're wrong. And they whip out some completely misunderstood, out of context Bible quote. You know, they didn't get there. They're just repeating because they're too busy with their daily lives. In other words, while it's tempting to be frustrated with people for not understanding and for being so ignorant about things, and it is, it's frustrating. As I said earlier, I'm the world's worst about this. I'm the world's worst about this. Understand, though, that that's reflective. They're not supposed to understand it on their own. They're not supposed to understand it on. If they were in the Old Testament, they would be the farmers, and they would be the sheep herders, and they would be. It's not their job. It's not their job to understand. It's their job to have. It's the job of the priest class, the job of the ministers, to explain it to them so that they can cut, kind of cut in line and at least condense it down and apply it to their lives. When these people, you got all these people come out here and they don't understand and they throw this stuff at you in complete ignorance, and you throw your hands up and you're like, how stupid can people be? Understand, it's never their job to understand it on their own in the first place. It's like these preachers throw the Bible and say, well, they got the Bible, they can figure it out themselves. Now, let me give you another 30-minute speech about why you need to send me some more money. They're just left on their own. Yeah. A shepherd's job is supposed to be, you know, to keep the sheep gathered up, to make sure the wolves don't get them. Their job's, these people stand out there, they're supposed to be shepherds. They just standing around looking at their phones, updating their Facebook page for the next fundraiser. They not the sheep just wandering wherever the hell. Just left them on their own. And again, we're not patting ourselves on the back and saying we're better. We're so much better than they are. The point is, again, when you understand the truth, you're going to have opportunities. Every one of you at some point in time is going to have the opportunity to share the truth on whatever the problem at hand, or whatever opportunity, whatever the context is, you're going to have little, I don't know, snapshots in your life, moments that may not last more than a few minutes, but you're going to have interactions with other people where you are going to be the minister. You're going to be the preacher in that moment. You are going to share the truth. Look, it doesn't matter. I said earlier, the truth is it exists of itself. The truth is the truth. In that context, it doesn't matter if the truth is coming from me. It doesn't matter who it's coming from, because it exists. You are going to have opportunities to share the truth, whatever it's pertaining to at the time. You are going to have times. And in that moment, you're going to be the teacher. You're going to be the minister. You're going to be the preacher. You're going to be the witness. I'm telling you, you're going to have, they may not, these things may not last but a couple of minutes, but in that couple of minutes, it's your time. I bumped my mic, sorry. It is your, such professionalism. It is your time to shine. Understand, it is your time to shine. When you share the truth with somebody in the time when those opportunities come up, and you don't have to go out fishing for them. They're going to come up. I don't know. But they will. And in that moment, then it's your time to shine. And guess what? In that moment, you're doing these things. In that moment, at least, you're a part of the priest class. This is why it matters. When you understand how church leadership has failed. Because the truth doesn't go away and God's work doesn't quit happening. He just breaks these things up and he assigns it to other people. The apostles, the original apostles, you know, they were fishermen by and large, and they were tradesmen. And yet he took and the old priest class, now no longer exists. And he broke that apart and started a new one. He started with these regular guys. He broke that apart. You see, it continues on. God's work continues on. That's why it's important. If you understand the failure and why people are walking around being ignorant, understand it's a failure of people to whose job it was to teach them. But the truth doesn't go away. So what's going to happen is God is going to give you opportunities to share the truth and to teach them. Most people, they may have money. They may be walking around on TV, slinging around the name of Jesus. Trust me, Jesus is going to have them keep theirs. They're going to wind up wishing they kept his name out of their mouth. But you're going to have your opportunity. And the truth doesn't go away. And you're going to have the opportunity to share that. We got to get on out here. I'm sorry I rambled a little there at the end. But I do think it's important. And that is kind of the point. And you understand that when church leadership fails, God simply hands that leadership to other people. Regular people. He has this pattern. Doesn't use big fancy people that already have position. He doesn't use it. He uses regular guys like you, like me, and like the early apostles. He has this pattern. He does it this way. So when there is a failure, a catastrophic wide failure in the priest class and the teacher class, it doesn't go away. He's just going to hand those positions to someone else. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here again. Sorry, we kind of rambled a little bit. We may have gone a little long here. But I'm glad you joined us this week. Hope you got something out of it. And hopefully you got enough out of it that you're going to want to come back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.